Alrighty. Christian Britschke.
Robbie Suave.
You were late today.
I was late.
And I know why. It's because...
Thankfully. Yeah, I was about to offer endless excuses, but you've already got it
figured out. It wasn't
out,
just that so. You were sleeping after a late night flight. You've been in some trouble, and I got you into a lot of that trouble. So, you know, you've been accused of all these frauds. And then they came out on TV, Christian, and they said, Christy Noem said this, that you're a domestic terrorist.
That's right, yeah.
And I felt just horrible. That's my friend Christian Britschke there talking about. I won't let them say that about Christian. So I marched. I marched on over.
Only you get to call me a domestic terrorist.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I went to go see the government. I'm friendly with Pamela Bondi.
So. Blackout Bondi.
So, Black Site Bondi, maybe? That's a Homeland Security.
That's
Christy Noem.
Well, okay.
I went to go see her, and I said, no, he's not a domestic terrorist. He's an esteemed member of our staff at Reason Magazine. The articles he writes for our website are widely read. He gets a lot of traffic for our website. So much web traffic, so much. He's the traffic king. He does all this trafficking.
Please. I don't like to brag.
A lot of traffic king.
Mm-hmm. Traffic king. No.
So, oopsies.
Said I was a wonder kid at trafficking. And,
kid trafficking. Yep. Those terms might have come up. So, you're off the hook for the domestic terrorism.
But well, that's good. Okay, that's...
They might be looking at you... they're going to be confiscating some hard drives. They're at your apartment right now.
Oh.
Just so you're aware. Christy Noem got fired as a result of this for overlooking the trafficking. And now we're going to have a new Homeland Security department. And you're going to have to answer some questions about, you know, what you knew and what you didn't know.
Oh, boy. Well, I look forward to my hard drive exonerating me and, you know, having nothing but early Simpsons episodes. And,
well, those unreleased... are probably code for child pornography or something, is what I understand now about the extra files.
You know, to stay one step ahead of the torrent censors, I did all label them child pornography because then no one would ever file. It's not copyrightable, so no one could ever file some sort of DCMA complaint, right?
Yeah, you've really thought about everything.
I did, except
all the
for,
angles of this thing covered.
Except for when you get the fuzz sent to my doorstep. So
should
we
say a few words about the end of Christy Noem? Someone whom, like, no one seems to like very much.
How about this? I could offer, to start everything off, I'll offer a heterodox take about something that I like about Christy Noem.
Yeah.
And then we can get it into all the various ways we do not like
it. Yeah. Keep it hetero.
Get it all the ways we don't like Deportation Barbie. So, as you mentioned, I just got off a flight today. And I had the distinct pleasure. I don't have pre-check. I don't have clear. I don't have any of the souped-up
real man
statuses.
Of the people.
I am.
I
know?
Use clear.
Clear is the one I hate most of all because it doesn't get you the things that I wanted
it's
from
terrible.
It. It's terrible. And it feels so aristocratic. You cut in line and that's not me.
Sometimes
that's
the clear line is just as long as the normal line. It feels like a real ripoff to me.
And it's like one of these things where it's like if everyone uses this, no one can win, right?
Right. And then you also have to put – now that they have the extra measure of they're going to have to scan your face, eyes, ID anyway. So it's like what is this even
– Yeah, exactly.
There. Whole ripoff.
Okay. So that's why I don't have clear. I don't have pre-check. But when I flew this afternoon / this morning, I had the distinct pleasure of not having to take my shoes off as I went through security. And you know who I have to thank for that? Christy Noem.
Well,
she,
we
over the objections of the DHS inspector general who said this was threatening Homeland Security.
Oh my God, that's so
she
fucking
lets us,
stupid.
It's so stupid. Yeah, they didn't do the studies to prove that keeping your shoes on doesn't matter
for
at
terrorism.
All. So because of her, we are allowed to walk through the screens and whatever else without pre-check and not have to take our shoes off. So that's the one nice thing I'll say about Christy Noem. But I'm trying to be positive. You had some other horrible things to say about her.
That didn't occur to me, and I thank her for that. I had nothing against her when she was coming into the administration. Department of Homeland Security is such a non-libertarian thing to do for the government.
The department should not exist at all.
Right.
It's funny, yeah, it's, before Christy Noem, I would say it was already this ridiculous amalgam of departments, like subunits of the government that should not exist, right? FEMA, TSA, You know, if you're open borders, you don't like ICE and border security or whatever else either, right? But under Noam, it's become what people feared it would be right at the very beginning of the Bush administration.
From an optic standpoint, at the
very least. Yeah, the masked federal thugs going around asking for your papers, please. It's really become that.
And what's so ironic is that in her governance of – she was governor of South Dakota.
That's right.
She did have a real libertarian streak during the pandemic. Some of the most COVID hands-off policies of anywhere in the country. That's why they had Freedom Fest, the libertarian gathering every year in Vegas. They had it there,
right?
Because that was the only state you could even do something like that.
South Dakota, I believe, is the only state to have no stay-at-home order, no lockdown order.
That's right.
Although that was, from my understanding, that was not her initiative. That was forced on her. She tried to issue a stay-at-home order, and the legislature countermanded her. So that
stop telling me I'm wrong. How dare you? Where do you get off? What do you think you're doing?
I'm trying to build us up to criticizing Kristi Noem more. No, truly, I'll explain how I'm wrong, actually, about Kristi Noem. I think I've said this maybe on a previous episode, but when we were coming into the second Trump administration, I actually thought that this was going to be a, all things considered, like pretty popular administration and a well-oiled machine, because he was picking all these – because in politics, all that really matters is narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was picking all these people who lived to just be media stars. Kristi Noem or Pete Hegseth, or, you know, we try to get Matt Gaetz in there, or Tulsi Gabbard, even, whatever. And it's like, okay, you have all these people who are like fundamentally just about media. Maybe they're not going to be good at running the department, but they'll know how to combat all these issues.
And the chief of staff runs the department.
And the chief of staff runs the department. Turns out, no, you actually need someone who's even minimally competent at top. And Kristi Noem was not that at all. In fact, she was remarkably incompetent. And it's hard to think of ways that she could have messed up on every single front more.
Well, because you can be a TV star and a media personality and be compelling but hated, right? I mean, I think that's what a lot of these people are missing, is that in reality TV – the kind of model from which all of these people come, it's not like you're right. They get a lot of attention for themselves, but you don't esteem and like all of these people. In fact, some of the people you are designed to hate.
They are
portrayed in a way to be hated.
Right.
And I think she clearly fell into that category, allowed herself to be led into that category. You know, she's doing just very showy, very her style mattered so much. This is really what estranged her from Trump and from Republicans, is it sounds like she was spending tons of money on travel, on advertisements that just glorified her, like $200 million advertisements about her. And Senator Kennedy,
Republican,
old Foghorn Leghorn. That's spending more money than a pig in slop, like that kind of thing. Yeah. He's great. I love listening to him. He could just be an obscenely bad senator and totally awful on policy, and I would forgive it because I love the way he talks.
This is why Jim Crow lasts as long as it did. Sorry, go on.
Oh, lots we could say about Jim Crow and ending it.
Which I don't. So I support ending it. Yeah.
Yeah. Get that on
the
record.
We were arguing about that earlier.
So he asked her, you know, to account for this $200 million in spending. And she was like, well, the president said I could do it. And he really did her dirty. He's like, he said he didn't believe that Trump would have allowed that.
That was really embarrassing. There was another moment, I think it was in a House committee hearing, where one of the Democrats is like, so this company that incorporated 8 days before it got $180 million from the government, like, do you know where it's headquartered? Do you know anything about this? It's weird that it's kind of connected to your own political allies. Obsessive focus on her own self-image, which is a huge mistake with Trump in particular, because he does not like to share that spotlight, right?
Yeah.
These are rookie Grand Vizier mistakes, right? You are not there to outshine the Sultan, right?
That's true.
You are there to be at his beck and call,
yes,
right? And if you start getting a little too big for your britches, right, a little too big for your ICE flak jacket that you're wearing, in your TV appearances, the Sultan's going to start to get
that's
a little
exactly
testy.
Exactly what happened to her.
And then on top of that, she just like was very clearly unprepared for the consequences of her like policy actions with these immigration.
Yeah.
As you mentioned in your piece that you wrote about, Christina, like in these immigration enforcement actions, it's like a smart person, a Tom Homan, who, you know,
say, wait for the facts.
He would say, wait for the facts when someone gets shot.
It's shut the fuck up Friday every day.
Yeah. Tom Homan would go a few steps before and say, is there some risk of throwing a bunch of completely untrained guys with guns into an area where people hate them? Is there something bad that could happen here that could be prevented? But clearly she did not care about that. Had a pretty poor judgment in her associates, too. This absolute scoundrel, Corey Lewandowski, who even for Trump world is a clown.
Yeah, this guy's been around a long time, and no one who knows him likes him.
How is he in a position of any prominence or influence whatsoever?
He's one of the most hated people in all of politics. I know that sounds like a very strong claim, but it's true. And it's been alleged they're having, you know, an affair. And I don't care about people's personal lives at all, really. But you're not supposed to bang, like, people who work for you if you work in the government.
Poor
it's
form.
A pretty basic thing.
And you shouldn't use a private government jet
to jet your lover, underling around. And she eventually did finally start getting asked about that, you know, while testifying before Congress, and she just wouldn't deny. I mean, it's very confirmed and very reported in the media.
Right. Yeah. Steve Nelson, the New York Post, I don't know if he published this, but he was talking on Twitter about it, where apparently, like, Trump is so aware of this, and because he's such a germaphobe, he's always talking about how they share the same can of soda.
which disgusts him.
Yeah, of course, right? So I think it's things like this, right? Yeah. Like, she lied about the ICE shootings. Jacob Solem had a good piece about her legacy, and it's like, she couldn't even admit that she lied. Like, she was like, just assumed that you can just, like, keep doubling down with more and more bald-faced lies. And, you know, maybe Trump can get away with that because he has a certain magnetism, but not her. He made all the mistakes to piss off Trump. Tried to steal the spotlight and did some kind of germophobic things that would worry a germaphobe.
Now the hammer falls.
And now she's gone.
She is no
more. Well, she's kicked upstairs to some
special envoy for the Sword of the West.
It sounds
something.
Like some insane Marvel bullshit.
It sounded a little Lord of the Ringsy to me. This will be the sacred flame to light the beacon to defend us from the marauding hordes of orcs. What the fuck is that?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's like when you see them light the beacons in the movie.
Yes, the beacons are lit.
These are all failed Gondor politicians who crashed out at Denethor. Thor's court.
Oh my god.
So now I have to set up another tower.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all for her.
We got a new DHS secretary now.
Mark Wayne Mullen.
Yeah,
Oklahoma. Cherokee.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, Cherokee. Oklahoma, of course. Yes. Yeah. He can bench like 330 pounds or something like that.
That's cool.
It's pretty impressive.
That's cool.
I had a dream about things to say about him on this podcast earlier today.
Dream about dudes lifting stuff?
I do.
Strong
I do.
Dudes?
Yeah. Not in a gay way. it's respect.
Yeah. We're keeping it heterodox.
I was thinking, tell me if you think this makes any sense. It literally did come to me in a dream. Homeland Security is a weird amalgam of stupid departments that shouldn't exist. They're just kind of shoved together with no rhyme or reason. Mark Wayne is two names that are shoved together. It doesn't really make any sense.
Oh my god. I and every person in all of America has had that thought too. What is this name?
Yes. It's not even hyphenated.
I had a dream last night. It's a little too abstract. It was too shopping carts, like grocery store carts, kept banging into each other. And like one couldn't get around the other.
Yeah.
I don't know what this dream, it's a prophecy of some kind.
This is some deep Freudianism.
Yeah.
Because then the shopping carts, one gets behind the other and that works
they fit into each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see what
the eroticism of consumerism. Yeah, we've been watching too much Mad Men, and so this is.
I have been watching a lot of Mad Men. We're in season 4 now. My favorite episode of Mad Men is the season three finale, Shut the Door, Have a Seat.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's the
so
best.
Great. It's a feel-good episode, too.
Yeah,
where they do the heist episode, basically. They
totally.
Do I love, everybody loves, you know, the team has broken up, and then you get the band back together, you do the Assemble the Avengers kind of montage. Mm-hmm. It's just great.
100%. Yeah,
it really
yeah.
pays off everyone feeling so disenchanted all season with the trajectory of the comedy. Like Pete's looking to leave,
Peggy's
thinking of leaving. Mm-hmm. Joan actually did leave and regretted it.
Yep.
And then they all
find their place
to
again.
Suit up yep. and mm-hmm. start a new thing.
Yeah, you know, that is it is kind of the peak of the series for me as yeah. well. I've now started like sporadically, like not even watching sequentially, just like episode here, episode there of like season 4 and 5.
That's crazy.
And
not sequentially, you know, that's crazy.
No, I like it, but it's just like it doesn't have
the same. I like stories
same...
told in order.
I'm a modernist, you know?
Yeah.
You ever watch one of those stories where it's the thing that happens later happens first? You
Ooh.
Know? Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, I totally do this in my novel, which I finished a draft of last weekend.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's applaud at home for everyone. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I gave myself the week off, but now I do have to revise it.
Mm.
Some revision
man,
to
yeah.
do. And I did break it. I'm just like... everyone else. I had to, it's three stories
mm-hmm.
and like, but of course I broke up one of the stories to be like part one, three and five. And mm-hmm. then part two takes place before part one and part four takes place. So
this is pretty intricate. Did you have some sort of timeline map? Did you
oh yeah.
It out?
Had to make a timeline for sure. Had to, cause it's taking place during a war between these two kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
Takes place in a frozen north kind of Narnia type place. And it's two kingdoms that are at war and they're at war for like 80 years. So I did have to start a little like, okay, year zero, the war starts, and then, okay, this is when this kingdom's winning, and this is when this story takes place, and then, you know, you gotta do that. And I gotta track everybody's ages, because then, like, their descendants show up in later stories, so I'd be like, okay,
yeah.
so you'd have to be born, I gotta make sure this makes sense, that would be your grandparent, you know.
Kind of do continuity, yeah, okay.
A little bit of
yeah,
that.
All right.
Like, could it make sense that, yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Speaking of wars.
Yes. Oh, yeah, if only we were fighting one now, but I'm told we're not.
It was not a war.
Right.
Right. It's just a military action. Even though we renamed, this is such bullshit.
Right,
they
yeah,
renamed okay. the Department of Defense the Department of War.
Nope.
And then we launched a bunch of awesome missiles at a country, blew up everyone.
Yeah.
And you want to tell me it's not a war?
Right.
What did you change the words on the building for if it's not a war?
This was Pete Hegseth's whole thing. Our Secretary of Defense was no more tepid legality, maximum lethality, badass, we're going
right.
to do Department of War, no more euphemisms.
Right.
The second they get into an unconstitutional illegal war, they're like, oh, it's what do you call that? The limited police action? This is
it's ridiculous.
Everyone is
it's absurd.
Such a pussy. Just like commit
just
to it. Commit
well,
to it.
Well, then they'd have to vote on it. They're not saying it because then they know they have to actually make Congress vote on it. And Congress doesn't want to vote on
well,
it. They don't want to do anything.
Then you shouldn't change the fucking signs.
I know. Then you should have left it.
Yeah.
You know, this is, and Hegseth also is, I don't want to be just relentlessly and consistently negative about everything the Trump administration is doing, although it is hard sometimes.
It's really bad here.
It's getting hard.
I rank the 21st century presidents, and I put George W. A while ago on Twitter, and I put George W. Bush at the very bottom.
Yeah.
But we're getting close. We're getting close to Trump 2 falling underneath that. Because they started a land war in Asia, you know? So.
And they didn't explain why. They just
no.
did it. There was no vote. I mean, say what you will about George W. Bush, but the reason for doing this was made very clear.
Yep.
And he sold it both domestically and internationally.
Put a huge amount of effort into this.
Yes. We were not sold on this at all, which is why we're all kind of confused. And then, and because they have to deny it's a war, then they'll have to say, then they, you know, say limited thing about how limited it is and we're just killing some bad guys. But then also they would like the entire regime to fall and be replaced by someone better. But we're not committing ground troops, which is the only way that could absolutely happen. But
oh, but actually, maybe we might.
Maybe we will.
Yep.
We're not, you know, they were about to get nukes, which is why we had to do this, which was true 8 months ago and a few years ago and a few years before that. And is true just at some point every day for the last 40 years. Okay, well, then why didn't, okay, fine. Then maybe we have to blow up their nuclear facilities. But it seems like we could do that without killing everyone in their government.
Yeah.
And killing a bunch of school children, which was a huge mistake. if that was in fact us, I know it's being investigated. It looks like it was us. It's bad.
Yeah, start out this war with a gigantic war crime, right?
Yeah, I mean, and then we're doing it because Israel did it, and Israel was about to be attacked, but that's our problem. Because Israel is about to be attacked, we don't get to vote on whether we go to war. I mean, I'm not someone who believes in any of like the Israel controlling us kinds of theory. In fact, I get very annoyed when people say that. But like, this is the way in which that feels true to many people. We no longer take a vote on whether we go to war because like Israel has a veto power over that.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
Well, it's remarkable. It's like, it's not even a veto power.
I think even
power,
if you like Israel, you could be annoyed with that.
Yeah. It's not even a veto power. It's like they can elect to commit us to this course of action.
Right.
Like Marco Rubio said that explicitly. It's like, well, what's the imminent threat to the United States? It's that, well, Israel is going to attack Iran. And then when they do that, then Iran is going to shoot all their missiles at our bases around, you know, in the Middle East. And mm-hmm. so it's like, okay, so because Israel is going to attack Iran, we have to now attack Iran. So it is like almost just like a parody of what people describe our foreign policy as, which is that like Israel, you know, we're being led by the nose by Israel here. And I mean, on this war, kind of seems like it. I mean, obviously, Donald Trump has no love for Iran and has wanted to do this for a long time himself, right?
But then also accused Obama of wanting to do it.
Right, yeah.
Trump is all over the place on a lot of these things.
Yes.
He's not an ideological thinker in ways that I think can be, frankly, beneficial in foreign policy. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it's just from his standpoint, it's negotiation. He was negotiating with them. He didn't like how it was going. He decided to blow them all up. Maybe the next guys will negotiate the way he likes. Honestly, I think that might be the way he thinks, and it's other people trying to ascribe some broader ideological project to it. Because, I mean, you saw what happened with Venezuela. It was not about toppling the regime.
No.
The woman who's in charge now is every bit as reprehensible as Nicolas Maduro, but Trump thinks he can get along with her better.
Yep.
He's the deal maker. He's the boardroom guy. Like, that's his thing.
And he's a big button pusher, right?
Mm-hmm.
He likes the bit. It's like, what are the things I, as the president, can order for my desk, right?
Yeah.
It's a tariff here. It's a bombing there. Venezuela on, like, you know, the, like, tactical side was a flawless success. And he's
right.
like, oh, cool. Yes. More of that. Let's do that with Iran. And so it's like,
let's... a flawless success, too. And you know, I'm listening to Pete Hegseth talk about it. And I'm like, okay, but it's not... This is not surprising. We are so powerful and awesome militarily. Yes, that was not in doubt.
Right.
We can blow things up really, really well.
Yeah.
You're not impressing me that you're amazed by this.
Right.
Yes, we can do terrific things. The Iraq War, which is now remembered as a failure and a mistake, was not a failure and a mistake militarily. We totally conquered them very well and successfully.
Yeah, we got to Baghdad
with great ease
in a week or two, right? Yeah,
along the exact time frame that the people in charge at the time said it would take, like to the hour. It went off exactly the way the organizers thought it would and was a rousing success. No difficulty there. The difficulty was then in occupying
everything
the country
else, yeah.
so that it would transition into a stable democracy.
Yeah, the difficulty was turning that very obvious, clear, easy military victory into a political and a strategic victory,
right.
which that was the criticism. The criticism of the Iraq War was never, oh, we won't be able to fight our way to Baghdad.
No, of course we can.
Yeah, we are masters
we
of the universe.
Kill,
in this respect.
Israel has hacked Iran's entire security systems. Like, one quarter of every person in Iranian authorities is an Israeli spy.
Mm-hmm.
Their movements are known to the Israelis and to us very specifically. We can precisely target and kill everyone who works in the government there, down to the janitor. It can be done.
Yeah.
Will that translate into Iran being governed by people we find to be more reasonable?
No.
Like,
no.
They have to at least sell me that it will be. I mean, I can't just take their word for it when they're not even bothering to try to convince me.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be persuaded. You know, I get to take the other side of it. The Iranian regime is evil and
sure.
was trying to do mass executions of its people and funds terrorist groups that attack Israel and other allies of us, the Houthis, the Hamas, etc. So, I don't take any of that for granted. But I want to know what we're trying to accomplish, and I don't because we didn't justify it to Congress and vote on it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's like a certain type of disrespect of like, no one's even bothered to lie to me.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
There's been zero war propaganda about this whatsoever. It's, and the reason that they do it is that they haven't done that is because it's like they just think public opinion is completely irrelevant, right? Which I guess it is. We've gifted the president this gigantic military that can do amazing things on a tactical level all around the globe. And the president, Trump, now is like, okay, well, I'm going to use it. And it doesn't matter what you say because no one can stop me, right?
But it matters.
It's like, you ever watch Wag the Dog, that movie?
No.
I hate that movie. It's so stupid.
I've never seen it.
But it's
Is it Gene Hackman?
I don't think it's Gene Hackman. I think it's Robert De Niro.
Okay.
I watched like 2/3 of it a decade ago. But it was so stupid. But it's this idea of Wag the Dog, you know, sometimes, you know, the dog wags his tail, sometimes the tail wags the dog. So, like, it's this notion that the plot of the movie is, and it's based off Bill Clinton bombing Kosovo to distract from Monica Lewinsky.
Oh.
President has a sex scandal, so he starts a foreign conflict in order to distract everyone's attention
this
away
is distracting
from
us from
I'm going to manipulate the media into, you know, focusing on this instead. And in the movie, it's very irritating because, like, everyone has to be a complete idiot in order for this to work. They end up, faking a war, right?
Oh my God. Yeah.
But here it's like, it's so funny. It's like they put all that elaborate effort, and this is how people used to think foreign policy would work. It's like, oh, we're doing this war to distract from some even worse thing. It's like, no, there's no distraction. They just don't give a shit what you think, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Trump's – I mean, so many of the anti-war people are saying, like, this is to distract from the Epstein
so
files.
Stupid.
Or this,
so
you know,
stupid.
Netanyahu runs Trump, and then Trump comes out and says, no, nobody told me to do this. I wanted to do this.
Yeah.
This sounded great to me to do.
Orange man press button. That's what's happening right now. There's no deeper conspiracy.
I mean, the danger Trump faces is that he did run on a promise of no new wars, and less foreign interventionism was an explicit selling point that he used to young people disproportionately. You know, young conservatives are not into this. Is bombing Iran is a boomer Republican issue.
Yeah,
is what I've come to understand
100%.
Since this has happened. Based on feedback I get from people who watch me, and I need to check the age of the person, boomer Republicans want to take out John McCain's dream. Younger conservatives are like, I'm not dying in a war for Israel.
Right.
So there's a pretty clear age split on this one.
Yes.
It's also the older Republicans are more likely to be Protestant or evangelical or even pro-Jewish,
right?
Younger conservatives we've been talking about are much more likely to be Catholic and just have much less esteem or interest in Israel as a project. These are some clear splits that are emerging. I'm surprised they actually don't get talked about as much as they are.
I think
they're so clear to me now.
As provided this war drags on for weeks and months and more Americans start to get killed.
And no war gets more popular over time.
No.
No.
Particularly because this one is not going to accomplish any aims,
right?
So as more Americans end up getting killed, as we make more mistakes and end up bombing more schools and hospitals or whatever else, I think the split will become more transparent. And because this lack of mission or goals is also going to become a lot more transparent and obvious. You can have all the goals in the world when, you know, it's a few days in and you're just like bombing targets and everything's going swimmingly. When you're out of interceptor missiles and, you know, you have 30 dead Americans instead of 6 dead Americans, and then maybe it's 100 dead Americans, and now you're considering sending in ground troops, then people are really going to want to know what the fuck is going on.
Well, let me play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Let me do devil's advocate.
Yeah. Give me your best boomer Republican impression.
The people who hate Israel also tend to hate the United States of America. And we're going to take them out. No, that's me doing that. But the good outcome
You like to turn on the TV, watch Iran getting bombed, and see a Medicare Advantage ad. That's your idea of a good time.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for paying for my golf lessons.
Can we get those property taxes down to zero for you?
Total boomer communism. Oh, yeah. We could talk about that more in a minute. But I think the good outcome is, well, something like Syria, where the leader of Syria seems like a relatively stable person who is pro-Western, the person who's come to power in Assad's fall.
Yeah, free market Al-Qaeda is kind of what we have there.
Well, you know what? That's fine.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
sure.
best
yeah,
we're
yeah,
going to
yeah,
do.
Yeah,
take
yeah,
the
yeah,
win at some
right,
point.
Yeah.
I like that he's all into, we must, you know, beat our swords into
plowshares.
Mm-hmm. You know, I fought... we fought against each other, but now we're gonna let that go and be friends. You gotta let. I like when they can let. Some of these Muslim extremists just don't let things go very much.
They have a problem with that. Separation anxiety.
I'm a big fan of them letting it go. So what if, okay, we killed a bunch of people, mm-hmm. and the next Iranian leader, maybe a little bit younger, because mm-hmm. they were run by an 86-year-old evil man who was crazy and evil in 86. I don't like old people in charge, period, as you know. And
Sleepy Jaheim or whatever.
The next guy, you know, is still a clerk of an extremist religion and is still, you know, it will not be a liberal democratic government. But the next guy doesn't want to get blown up and does some better diplomacy with Trump and have some kind of agreement on nuclear or whatever, like the agreement we had in place with Obama, but better or whatever, the same exact thing, who knows. And that's that. And a couple more Americans die between now and 5 weeks from now when that gets worked up in retaliatory strikes. But the death toll's not in the hundreds or anything. And the next person is, again, still – it's like Venezuela. Still bad, but a little less bad in some way. And nothing more consequential happens than that.
Okay, yeah. So three
– I think that is a not – totally unlikely outcome, but
I suppose it could happen. But then you have to ask yourself, is it worth this cost of mm-hmm. I mean, again, like, we blew up a school and killed 100 school children.
Yeah,
so is it worth that to get a slightly less bad you know, leader of Iran? Mm-hmm. So that's the first question. Like, at least in Venezuela, you can say, like, no Americans died, no one who wasn't like a Cuban, you know, thug died.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, the cost here, small. But here, yeah, already the cost to civilians is mounting. The cost to our own military is mounting, like, you know, beyond just like lives lost. You know, it's expensive. Our military is set up to be very expensive with like interceptor missiles or whatever. It's hard to make those. Reason had a good essay by Matthew Petty about what happens when America runs out of bombs from a few years ago, just mm-hmm. like talking about all our problems with how long it takes to make THAAD missiles and Patriot mm-hmm. missiles and whatever else. So even if we do get this like marginally better result, it comes at a huge cost. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, like, is that what's going to happen, right? What the leader that gets elevated in this situation where we're just assassinating everyone, is he going to be the, you know, deal maker, or is he going to be the radical who promises to fight on?
Well, if he's not the deal, he's going to get assassinated then. We're going to just keep killing him until they were meeting to pick a new one, and we blew up the meeting.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That should have been a Zoom.
Well, it actually was, though, right? They bombed the building, but the guys weren't in the building, right? Yeah. So that's been a little misreported, I think. Yeah, so there's that. And then, yeah, you like bring the Syria example, right? This war goes on, you know, like we bombed Syria plenty of times. We had troops on the ground there, although they weren't directly trying to overthrow the regime, the Assad regime.
Right.
Although we did bomb the Syrian government a couple times.
Right.
But ultimately the regime just collapsed eventually.
Yeah. I mean, we did have sanctions on the regime and that.
Yeah. But I mean, we've
something.
Had sanctions on Iran since the revolution.
Yeah.
So I find it very unlikely that our bombs from the air are going to produce any real change in regime behavior, and might produce the opposite effect of making it, you know, well, there's no reason not to unleash terrorism on the rest of the Middle East or because that now that's your only now you need some leverage, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, how do I get America to stop bombing me when they've made it very when they're doing it? They've made it very clear, like, this is how they see mm-hmm. they're going to affect political change in my country. Well, I have to make it costly for them. That's why they're shooting missiles at the Kuwait airport. And, you know, if they are these, you know, terrorists with a whole Middle East spanning terrorism network, well, they can make things pretty difficult across the Middle East, right?
Well, so, Israel might say they've already done that. The Hamas is an Iranian funded terrorist group that attacked them, killed tons of people, and they're not going to be safe until all of Hamas is destroyed. I mean, and they've been willing to carry out a mass casualty campaign to root out Hamas and everyone, just everyone who lives in that area. And now it's time for the next step, which is the people who funded them, and they must die, and everyone must die, and they will keep dying until they're all dead.
So
and that's the Israeli perspective, I think.
I guess. But this is
I would just lean into it. I would just you know, yeah, sure, it's none of my business. Go forth.
Over there.
Live
over
your best life. I just don't want to be involved.
I'd like to be less involved. I call this the, like, wouldn't it be nice school of foreign policy, right? It's like you go back to the Iraq War, right, and say, you know, as libertarians, we don't believe dictators just because they're leaders of another country have some sort of inherent right to oppress their people.
Right. And I was arguing about this with Nina Turner on Two Way yesterday because she was – what right do we – she kept using the what right framework do we have? And I'm like, well, that's not the – that's – that is unconvincing to me because they have no right.
The dictator has no right to tyranny over the people. Right. Yeah, so that's completely unconvincing, right?
They have no moral right.
Right.
We have in a very narrow sense, I think, not a constitutional right to do this without Congress voting for it. But any person on earth has the moral right
to resist tyranny,
or on behalf of another to do it. You don't have the obligation. That's the main difference. You may work to liberate someone. You are not morally obligated to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah. And also just, I mean, it's a question of prudence, right?
Right.
So again, this was the Iraq War. How did a bunch of liberals and even some libertarians get on board with the idea that the Iraq War was going to be great and awesome? It's like, oh, we're overthrowing a dictator and whoever comes next, it's gotta be better than what we have now. Well, wouldn't it be nice if that were the case? If we just bombed Iraq and spent 3 weeks there, you know, turning the country over to people.
That was a very real case of the next guys being worse.
Yes, it was
ISIS.
Yes, it was
much more inclined to harm Americans, to harm everyone throughout the Middle East. We got the literal worst.
Yeah, you go from
it's hard to be worse than ISIS. Like in the history of just human beings, they're like up there with the Aztecs or something.
You gotta go back to Mongols and
like utter. Like depraved savagery, in cult form.
Yep.
Yeah.
Beyond cult to just like nihilism. Yes. Max. It's like Clockwork Orange.
Yes.
Like Islamic Clockwork Orange. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what we got. 15, 20 years of just a horrible, bloody civil war, absolutely devastated Iraq.
Right.
And now, after the violence has died down just a little bit in Iraq, now the neocons like poke up their head too and say, see, wasn't that a good idea? Saddam is gone.
Right.
I think we can just expect, you know, maybe the regime does crumple, but then we can just expect something similar in Iran. It's funny how we just keep playing the hits. You know, now it's like, oh, you know what we got to do? We got to arm the Kurds.
Mm.
that's been the U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East since like the 1990s, right? It's like, oh, the Kurds, they're our guys.
Yeah.
We'll arm the Kurds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, are you winning, son? I'm arming the Kurds. That meme, though.
Speaking of memes, and we could just say we're not involved, but Israel, do whatever you're going to do, but it's your problem, not ours.
No, because of what Israel does, we have to do
but
this.
But we're still in, or the administration's still in, it's awesome and cool, and we want to take credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the White House, did you see this video I sent you to watch?
Yeah, I watched most of it. I'm just kidding. It's like 40 seconds.
But we're going to play it.
Wake up, Daddy's home.
Welcome home, son.
Strength and honor.
Strength and honor.
What will you do without freedom?
Mavericks inbound.
You can't conceive of what I'm capable of!
Finishing this fight.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
I'm here to fight for truth and justice in the American way.
I am the danger. F-A.
Time to find out.
Maximum effort.
Finish him. Here it comes.
Now end this.
Flawless victory.
What the fuck? I mean, half of the people depicted in that video are villains.
Yeah.
Like, you wrote a piece for Reason a couple months ago or like a year ago or something. Mm-hmm. Why does the Trump administration keep, you know, portraying themselves
as
in these
the bad
memes
guys.
As
yeah.
the bad, like, the Empire in Star Wars is the bad guys.
Right.
Walter White is the bad guy.
Like, I'm the one who knocks? Like, that's not supposed to be an inspiring
He's a villainous.
Yeah.
Like, are you a child to have not discerned the very obvious moral lessons in these kinds of things? Like, Walter White becomes a monster in the course of giving into his desire for self aggrandizement.
Yep.
He gives into his basest needs.
Yeah.
His greed and his hunger for power causes him to, you know, do all these evil things. Like, that's the message. Saul from the same series, they had a hymn of saying that, which is my favorite scene in all of Better Call Saul, where he's screaming at Howard, the lightning bolts shoot from my fingertips scene, which is a great, it's like his transformation is complete into mm-hmm. this just, you know, he's evil in a different way than Walter yeah. White. He's mm-hmm. this charlatan.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't actively wish harm on others in the same way, but he's screaming at Howard, an upstanding lawyer mm-hmm. who has tried to help him, mm-hmm. and he's walking behind him and just like yelling at him like a little evil imp about yeah. things that don't make any sense because he's now caught up in this drug world and he's thrilled by it.
Yeah.
And it's so odd, and everyone's looking at him like he's an insane person.
Yeah.
But he's getting such a thrill off of it. And then Howard leaves, and then there's like a lingering moment of him. He's insane.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be that guy. It is
right.
It is not ambiguous.
Right.
That you are not supposed to. Maybe you can sympathize with what he's become, but you're not supposed to say, awesome, based, yes, cool.
Cool, awesome.
Kylo Ren is shooting. I mean, I hate even discussing the more recent Star Wars films because they're so bad, but Kylo Ren—
talk about a war crime, man.
Is shooting at a hologram of Luke Skywalker because he's obsessed with and hates Luke Skywalker, and Luke is projecting the hologram as a diversion so the good guys can get away. And Kylo Ren is monomaniacally instructing all of his forces to fire on Luke while the good guys get away because he's so obsessed with he's blinded by his hatred of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
That is not a sophisticated story. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And they're being like,
yes, us. That's us.
That's us.
That's us. Yeah,
that's
we're the ones
shooting at this figment of our imagination.
Phantoms. Yeah. Yeah. So as I mentioned in my piece about why they keep casting themselves as the bad guys. So, the criticism of the Department of Defense was that it was this Orwellian euphemism. It's like, we don't do defense.
Right.
We're doing war. Right. And we should just be honest and transparent about that. But then the Trump administration comes in and they're like, no, we don't like the euphemism because it actually does constrain our behavior. By calling it the Department of Defense, we're not going around and blowing shit up, right? Mm-hmm. And so by renaming it the Department of War, it's like, we want to be more bloodthirsty. I mean, you can see from that video because they intersplice it with them blowing up this Iranian ship in the middle of the ocean. Some of these
right.
bomb strikes is like so I'm pretty deep into they're the boys with the toys, right? I'm pretty deep into Sopranos meme culture online, and there's
it's a great culture.
Yeah, within the community, there's they make fun of like boomer fans of the show who like fail to grasp any of the messages and instead just say like Tony badass, right? That's who's running our military right now.
They
see Tony Soprano and they're like, that guy's fucking cool. He sleeps with women and is a mobster. That's awesome. Even though the entire show is about how he's miserable and he just brings death and destruction to everyone around him.
Right.
Same with Walter White. You know, there was like people who could really appreciate the destruction of this character.
Right.
And then there was people who are like, whoa, magnets.
Yeah.
You know, Walter White, badass. Why is that bitch Skylar White always telling him not to be a drug dealer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I guess.
Yeah. It's so childish. Yeah. Like their criticism of Biden era foreign policy, the Trump administration, Pete Hegseth and all of them was, it's just like these chickens running around with their heads cut off. They're afraid, you know, they hate America or they're afraid to exercise power. We're just incompetent. And now we've just gone complete 180 and it's like, oh, we can accomplish everything we want by just blowing shit up. And look how cool it is, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's where we are at.
That's not great. It's
no.
That is what it is. It's hard to reach any other conclusion.
Yeah.
When we don't even take a vote on what we're doing.
No. And that's just the only audience, the only people they feel like they need to speak to are the people who watch Breaking Bad and are like, "Whoa, Walter White, badass! I like this video."
I know.
Yeah.
Ugh. Like, how can you watch those things and just not come away? Or even Star Wars, it's more obvious. It's more direct. I don't know, man.
It doesn't even have the effect of being menacing anymore, right? It's just like you're an idiot. It's like watching a monkey play
it's
with
like
a gun, right? Like, yeah, you're going to shoot someone.
It's like you have a tiny penis. it's overcompensating.
Yeah.
They seem to be doing some overcompensating.
I don't want to get too Freudian about it.
Yeah. But, it's my shopping cart stream all over again.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It's just...
another thing I wanted to talk about this week, you know, we can't avoid it entirely.
Huh.
Our your old friend, Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Bill and Hillary testified this week. Yeah. And I watched all 8 hours of the...
Did you actually?
I watched it on 2x speed, so it didn't take me 8 hours, but I did. And it was very entertaining.
Okay.
These were separate interrogations.
Right.
And they are entertaining, both of them, for different reasons. Because Bill is very old. He's showing his age. He's about 80.
Yeah.
And he looks very old. He's shaky. He had trouble. He had understandable trouble recalling certain things because he was asked to recall things that happened 30 years ago, and he's a very old man. So it's not surprising that he couldn't quite remember every detail, except when they ask him about like the flight attendant who gave him a massage. He's like, oh, Ashanti, yeah. And they were showing him like pictures. He was looking at some of the pictures like, and you could see the smile. He's fondly recalling old times.
Okay, so those weren't taken out of context.
No, they were not. That horny old man
is lawyer. Yeah,
you gotta love it.
Yeah,
you gotta love it.
Yeah,
because I realized why I so enjoyed watching them is that they're just, you know, these two people I don't like and never supported and never voted for and in fact opposed. They're just like beloved characters from a former season. Mm. It was nice to see him back one last time.
Yeah.
Hillary is all sharp is as ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, she looked good. She is not showing her age, and she was just awesome in this hearing because Lauren Boebert and Anna Paulina Luna and Nancy Mace were just like little girls who have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And they were up against the most seasoned political operative ever, someone who has done more combative interviews and debates and sessions of this nature than they've had hot dinners. And they were it was like amateurs coming at her. It was glorious to watch. And also she didn't know anything. She's never met Epstein, and that became pretty clear. So she just kept saying over and over again, yes, I've never been there, I've never met him. And at some point she basically does the mic from Breaking Bad. Am I under arrest? What happened? You forget your handcuffs?
Right. Yeah.
She said, like, if you have a single email showing that I know this man, show it to me.
Yeah.
And it was pretty great. I don't know how anyone could watch it without thinking it was awesome.
Hey, say what you will about Hillary Clinton. She is a cold, hard bitch, right? Mm-hmm. Like she's tough. She's tough. Do you remember in the 2016 debate, they asked, is the second one, their town hall style debate, and the moderators asked Trump and Hillary Clinton to say something nice about each other. And Hillary Clinton says, I like that Donald Trump's children seem to really love him and that they're like a close family, that they're fighting this together. And what does Trump say about Hillary? He says, she's tough. She's tough.
She's not letting this go without a fight.
No, he respected that.
Yep.
He loathed Hillary Clinton, but he respected that she was a fighter, and in some ways considered her a worthy opponent, right?
I remember that debate perfectly. I remember that moment because those were good answers from both of them.
They really were.
They really were. Really good answers.
In the middle of a complete shit show of an election, it was actually like a kind of – it was an interesting moment and a revealing moment.
Revealing.
And I wonder if – tell me if I'm completely off base here. I wonder if Hillary Clinton is the last of a dying breed in a way, which is media has become so diffuse now that today's scandal is completely forgotten by tomorrow, right? But she lived in a time when, you know, the media, television is everywhere. Cable, 24-hour cable news is now a thing that basically everyone can watch. And she was the center of it in an incredibly humiliating way for weeks and months and even years.
Yes.
Right? And so she's just this, like, diamond forged in the intent, like this intense media pressure that I don't think you could bring to bear on anything anymore.
That's true. And no one would care. It wouldn't matter. It wouldn't last long enough.
It couldn't.
It'd be too fleeting.
It would, you know, you can be the hated character of the day, right? Yes. For the next 24
hours. There's a Republican representative who won't resign even though His mistress,
the, who was his assistant, staffer who
set herself
an
on fire and killed herself, yeah. Which is awful. And he won't even resign. And it's kind of controversial, but
no one really.
There's too much going on.
I bet, you know, 60% of the people listening to this podcast right now can't even name that representative.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, because he's got a Latino name. I don't know, Juan Pablo or something.
Tony Gonzalez.
there it is.
That sounds like I'm making fun of him.
yeah, and that doesn't name. Even, doesn't even register. Yeah. It's awful what happened. Yeah. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. So bad. And he should resign. And then the other guy, then the guy who's going to win is a gun enthusiast, which I'm all for that.
Oh, okay.
There's something about him owning like a copy of Mein Kampf.
Who among us?
Well, because right, they were portraying it as, can you believe he owns that? But then I saw just before we started this, like a 30-second clip of him explaining that he was trying to prove a point that you couldn't order Mein Kampf on Amazon, but you could order the Communist Manifesto. Huh. So
can you not order Mein Kampf?
I have no idea. I mean, I try every day, but
yeah. I say what you will about the Communist Manifesto, but it's like at least as like a fun and interesting piece of writing.
Is it
Mein Kampf is not slog.
It's a slog.
Well, Hitler didn't even write it. He dictated it to Rudolf Hess, and then apparently like very extensive edits to make it even modestly intelligible.
Mm.
No, I get really worried, but you know, people read Mein Kampf out of historical interest.
For sure.
What I would get really worried about is if someone has Hitler's second book, which on Wikipedia is literally called Hitler's Second Book, the unpublished sequel to Mein Kampf.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's when you got to get worried. Yeah, speaking of Texas, do we want to talk about this, the Senate, race, the primary at all?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, Jasmine Crockett is no longer.
Princess Jasmine.
Princess Jasmine, taking one last magic carpet ride. I adore her as a media figure because she's very funny. She's very attractive. Mm-hmm. People don't talk about that enough because it's wrong to do so, but she's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that. She's attractive.
How would you know?
James Tallarico is perceived.
Is that how you say it?
Tallarico?
It's Tallarico.
It's Tallarico?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, no, it's Tallarico.
I assume that you just pronounce it like a Texas gas station. But
Tallarico.
It's Italian, so you should know.
He's the acceptable moderate. Doesn't
Even
really
he's
seem
not
like he's
moderate.
No, it seems like his whole thing, which I find very cringe, and you probably do too. I mean, I'm not like particularly religious, but if you're going to be religious, be religious. And his whole thing is explaining why, religion is about supporting trans people's abortions or whatever.
I hold this man in a deep and perhaps unchristian contempt for this very reason. And it's one of the reasons I wish Jasmine Crockett had one, honestly. Yes, he goes around and posits some, you know, presents himself as a devout Christian. I guess he went to a like Presbyterian seminary or whatever. But then
it's already a little fake.
It's already, this is already kind of like pride flag, mainline Protestant Christianity that's kind of collapsed. But he presents himself as a Christian only to make like Reddit well actually points that do nothing but degrade Christianity in the service of just his like liberal political goals. So, you know, he did an interview with the New York Times recently where, you know, they ask him like, are all religions true? Is just Christianity true? And he says, yes, of course all religions are true because, you know, it's just like different languages, you know, there's a Spanish word for cup and an English word for cup, but they mean the same thing. You are not a Christian if you believe that. That means that Jesus's sacrifice on the cross is completely irrelevant and means nothing because it didn't have to happen for any particular reason at all, right? He just does nothing but degrade Christianity. Or what's the other one? Yeah, his I don't understand, you know, Mary, you know, when the angel presents, you know, comes to Mary and says that she will bear the, you know, Jesus, she's carrying, you know, the Son of God in her womb. And he's like, yeah, this was about God, you know, asking to see if she wanted to get an abortion or not, you know,
oh,
or her
God.
consent. Just not only is that biblically just
it's offensive,
idiotic, but it's offensive. Yes, it is. Or this, you know, how he became a big star. People maybe forget this. The New York Times described it as like, oh, this is such a great smackdown point, as when Texas was debating whether to put the Ten Commandments in schools. And, you know, certainly on constitutional grounds, you know, you shouldn't be putting that in public schools.
Right.
I can agree with that. But he was making the point that, because this is what he does, it's like, oh, this is anti-Christian to publicly display the Ten Commandments. It's like, really? It's anti-Christian to, firstly, where do you think we got the Ten Commandments? Moses coming down from the mountain in the most cinematic possible way with giant stone tablets laying down the law. And yeah, so the idea that it's anti-Christian in order to have any sort of public display of Christianity, and he again misquotes scripture about how you should pray quietly in your room to justify this point. So I just have nothing but contempt for this guy. He also just looks annoying. I know that shouldn't matter.
He does
but just he looks like a child. Yeah, I described it on Twitter when he won. I described it as an Encyclopedia Brown beats whatever the opposite of an encyclopedia is.
Well, he is too religious conservatives, what like Tim Walls is to rural conservatives.
Yes,
like,
yes, exactly.
I'm one of you. I can fix a car. I'm like, but he's too much of a moron.
It's insulting.
It's insulting.
It's insulting because it's like I can these things that matter to you that are actually part of your personality. I can wear as a skin in order to get you dumb hicks to vote for me.
Right.
Right? It is.
There's something dishonest and insincere about it.
It's cynical.
I think he reeks of insincerity.
It's so very cynical. And yeah, I mean, people have been pulling up all his, you know, old tweets from 2020 and,
oh my God, he went hardcore.
Because of course he's the kind of person who would do that, right?
Whiteness as a disease.
Yes.
He's literally describing, what he's describing was, I thought, COVID. He is,
his tweets
are describing in such vivid terms the disease of whiteness. I thought he was describing COVID.
But then this is why it's so cynical and vacuous, right? Because it's like he's describing himself as a white person as inherently toxic. Everywhere he goes, he spreads the virus of racism. It's like, well, if that's what you believe, how on earth could you possibly tell voters that they should entrust you with the powers of a senator?
Yeah.
And not only that, run against a woman
you just
of
beat
color.
A black woman.
You might as well have, like literally beaten her, right? Because, if you're so inherently toxic, how can you, think that you could possibly people should possibly trust you with power, but clearly he doesn't think that. He just thinks he can just say those words to get you, Rube, idiot, Mark.
I liked how Kamala Harris snuck in there with the last minute failing endorsement of Jeff and Crockett. It's like she couldn't. It's the kiss of death.
Yeah,
that poor woman.
She's like, she's the Jim Cramer of politics.
Yep.
Yeah.
On the Republican side, a better than expected showing for the incumbent John Cornyn, who's some. Never Trump cuck. He actually isn't, but that's what me and MAGA is like. He's the other guy is like,
Ken
had
Paxton.
An affair, thrown out of censored, all this stuff. And MAGA's like, you don't have
putting
to sell me on it. I'm already voting for him.
Right. Complete corrupt.
The more they like it.
Yeah, total corrupt grifter. Does nothing but file like ludicrous lawsuits against the federal government.
They can only get so erect.
Big time.
They love that.
I don't understand. Yeah. Okay. So on the left, people, there's a certain type of person who loves this this smooth talking straight A student who says all the woke platitudes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before James Tallarico or however you say his name, it was Beto O'Rourke. This candidate that the libs
don't know how to say his name either.
Yeah.
I really don't know. Beto.
I always kind of wish that he had done a little better in the primaries, so that then Trump could start calling him Beto O'Rourke
or Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah,
Beto.
Beto O'Rourke. He likes some little young folks. What a loser, this guy. No, that never happened.
Ron DeSanctimonious is the best of all time.
I don't like that one.
I love
that
one.
Good.
Ron DeSanctimonious.
Didn't you start calling him Ron DeSantis, right?
That is his name, isn't it?
Ronda.
Oh.
Ron DeSantis. Yeah. He's had some. Lion Ted. That's what I always
like. Lion Ted. Yeah. You like Lion Ted. Sleepy Joe.
Sleepy
Lion
Joe.
Ted.
Sleepy Joe's good.
Simple.
Nervous Nancy. libs like these like very transparently cynical politicians who lie to them about the woke platitudes. I don't quite understand it. It's really bad for Democrats in Texas, right? Because for whatever reason, like their Senate candidate is always this guy before it was James Tallarico, it was Beto O'Rourke, and before him, if you remember Wendy Davis from back in the day, Abortion Barbie.
Mm.
These candidates that like are really good at fundraising from
for
liberals
Democrats.
Outside of Texas,
yeah.
right? But are really bad at getting votes inside of Texas. And I wonder if this is like, I mean, these candidates pop up all over the place, but it does seem kind of particular to Texas. And I wonder if it's just like, Texas is a big state, and so you need a lot of money to even run a failing campaign. And so it kind of selects for the people who are media star grandstanders, even though they're terrible candidates for the state. You know, but I don't know. Mm. So I doubt Texas is going blue this time. That's every election cycle, the media, in the polls between nothing happens and monitoring the situation, this is way over on the nothing happens side. Mm. Texas going blue.
It's You're not calling happening. It now. Not happening.
Not happening. Not happening. I think even...
It could matter because, I mean, the fate of the Senate could hang in the balance.
Yeah. No, we need the woke-tards and the MAGA grifters to run against each other. You can't have replacement-level Republican senator who's going to cast a reliable vote for Republican priorities.
Can't do it.
And otherwise be completely forgettable. Yeah, I think The Economist described him as like central casting senator John Cornyn, and he looks exactly like it. Yeah.
Not acceptable. Yeah. You can sense how badly Republican primary voters want to primary Susan Collins with some deranged MAGA person. Like they can't, they're like sitting in the corner sweating. You know, let us do it. Run Kerry Lake here. Lose the seat by 40 points. Yes.
Yeah, get them. Oh,
it's like the ring. It calls to them
to
throw away these totally winnable Senate races.
Yeah, right. On complete idiots. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Ugh. Who's the one almost meme candidate at this point? Was it Valentina Gomez? Am I getting that wrong?
Oh, yes.
She like ran in Arkansas and got like 500 votes and then tried to run for some Texas Congress seat and got like 500 votes.
She is crazy.
Yeah, but she's a Twitter star. Her whole campaign is like Muslims are bad.
She's so mentally unstable you wouldn't like trust her to get your groceries or something, but she's Therese... always just walking around pointing guns at things. And she is very attractive, and that's all she's got going for her.
Yeah,
I saw James Fishback is another one. He's a little less of a joke candidate, maybe.
I saw there's some polls coming out showing that he actually had not so bad.
Young Republicans, they like this guy. This is the Florida guy,
gubernatorial candidate,
the first Groyper candidate, absolute grifter, of course. But he's got something. He's got some genuine support among young Republicans. I watched him actually talking with. He posted this. He was doing some kind of debate or discussion with an avowed actual white nationalist. He's very anti-Israel, Jewish, you know, all the views that go along with a Groyper style candidate. But he's discussing with this white nationalist. The white nationalist is trying to get him to say that black people are not heritage Americans or not real Americans, because that's the white nationalist agenda.
Yeah.
And James Fishback is just like utterly rejecting that. His view is that immigrants are not real Americans.
Yeah, sure.
But black people,
they've been here.
Were brought here to America. Sure. Yeah. And he's saying like, well, black people fought in World War I, they fought in World War II, they've been here, these are their descendants, they've been here, whereas, you know, like an immigrant from, I don't care if it's from India or Asia or from Sweden, somebody who just showed up 10 years ago, they're not really an American. But a black person whose, you know, great-great-grandfather came here, they're a heritage American, and the white nationalist was just getting so mad. And he's just like, but they're not. They're not.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
It's kind of interesting.
I like these tricksy
contradictions of what counts as a heritage American. trying to spin it in a way that it's just
like, just racist enough, just, right? Yeah, it's like the old drill tweet. I'm turning the racism dial. Yeah.
You wanted to talk to me about airplane etiquette.
Oh, yes.
Hit me with some facts. Destroy me with facts and logic.
Oh, get ready. No, I have no facts and logic here because this appears to be a perfectly divisible issue.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many of these social faux pas or whatever, the am I the asshole posts or whatever. There's a very clear yes or no answer.
Yeah.
And you can reason your way to it. And all people of good sense and good conscience agree. This I've been the thought occurred to me because I took a red eye from Salt Lake City to Washington, D.C. this morning. Or Dulles, so that doesn't really count as Washington, D.C. It's far away. But it's a red eye, but I was not sleepy. I wanted to read. Oh. And so I didn't know if it was rude or not for me to turn on my reading lamp.
It's a very directed just at you. I think it's fine.
You think it's fine? Okay. Yeah. Well, so it's a moot point for my actual flight because the lamp did not work. But I texted my friend right before the plane took off. I'm like, am I bad if I do this? Is this annoying? And then I turn my phone off for the flight. I land and I get a text from him. Yes, this is the worst possible
really?
Thing you could ever do. Yes, it's the most annoying thing ever.
I don't take overnight flights that much, but it's a single beam of light on a specific person
onto
for
your
that
seat.
Reason.
Yeah,
it doesn't
right.
generally
it
doesn't illuminate.
Out, right,
yeah.
Yeah.
yeah,
yeah. So then I ask my other friend, who's a frequent flyer, does this make me an asshole? And he says, no. What? No, they're the asshole for getting upset about it. Wear a face mask, you know, a sleep mask if
yeah.
you're bothered by light. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Ask two more people. Boom, right down the middle again. Yes,
oh,
this is the worst possible thing you could do. That's completely fine. Everyone else is an asshole for complaining about it. But you, so you are on it's completely fine territory.
Yeah, if it was not fine, they shouldn't give that option. It really is a single concentrated beam of light
yeah.
that just illuminates the person. I mean,
it's,
yeah.
You have to be.
I think it's fine. I do think it's fine.
So, yeah, I checked. So on our, you know, the subreddit, r Delta for Delta Flyers, they all said it was completely fine.
Yeah.
On the subreddit, r Whiny Babies, they said it's not fine.
They would say it.
But this is very divisive. And look, I pride myself.
Being a conscientious human being.
Not just a conscientious human being. You know, we all have our flaws and our foibles.
Mm-hmm.
We all make mistakes. But
mm-hmm.
not being a conscientious flyer, you know? I don't put my seat back.
Nobody should. Or else we just all have to do it and it's just like...
Right, yeah. I appreciate that it's your right to put your seat back
mm-hmm.
should you wish to.
Mm-hmm.
I very actively do not get annoyed should I hear children crying. They can't help it. They're children.
I do get annoyed, but I'm not going to say anything, obviously.
No,
it's just annoying,
not. Yeah.
but it's no, it can't be
it's
avoided.
Something, it's something
yeah.
you must bear, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I like to get to the airport early just for my own peace of mind.
Me too.
And also because when you're in a rush, you're a worse person to everyone else around you. But – and so I was shocked and horrified to hear that maybe – because on the flight out there, I've been reading War and Peace and here's my five-hour block of time to like get some pages down. That maybe I had been the asshole. And say I'm not, but other people.
You are forgiven, my child.
Thank you. All I crave is your absolution.
That's nothing. Some people get mad if you take your like shoes off. I think if it's a long flight, it's fine to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know.
Planes, they
that.
Circulate so much air that like it's really hard to for odors to.
I think if you're on a flight, especially an overnight flight, if you're in like pajamas, it's. Fine too.
I mean, the aesthetics, but that's your right as an American.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What are some plane behaviors that this is unacceptable that you think?
I've been on flights, funny enough, once or twice where people got too drunk and were a problem.
Oh wow.
A flight to Vegas.
Oh well.
For Freedom Fest, actually. Might
hey.
Have been one of the times you were there.
Yeah, I was on that flight. Oh, we're having a great time.
No, this guy totally collapsed in the middle of the aisle from drinking.
Whoa,
and he knocked over. He knocked over my whatever I was. I don't think I was drinking I don't usually drink alcohol on a flight unless it's like a long, long flight.
Yeah,
I drink in the airport before. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But he knocked over whatever I had, coffee or water or something.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like,
was this your
Jesus
seatmate?
Christ. No, he was just staggering down the aisle.
Oh, wow, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
How do you get drunk on a flight?
It's crazy.
They come by like once an hour.
They were drunk
or not
before
once an hour,
they got
like
on, I think.
Yeah.
So that was not good. That annoyed me.
That's pretty bad.
And then one time I had this woman, I was on a flight to California,
mm-hmm.
so it's just a long flight. And I was like the last person aboard, and I'm in like the last row at the back of the plane, and I have a middle seat. So these are all bad things already. I have a middle seat to gigantic fat people on either side.
Yeah.
But it's a woman on the aisle seat, big fat woman, and she was asleep already. She must have drugged herself or something because she was not wakeable.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't get past her. And I went to the flight attendant. I'm like, I can't. And the flight attendant was like kind of trying to shake her. Like she would not – like her head was gagging. She was out.
Oh.
So I'm like, all right, I got to climb over this lady. So I had to climb over this woman.
Oh.
And then the whole flight – so that's not – whatever. That's fine. It knocked you out quicker than you thought.
Yeah.
But the whole flight, she kept falling onto me.
Oh, yeah.
And
this
by the end, I started like really aggressively like elbowing that woman to her – get out of my fucking way.
Yeah.
And the other guy was awful too. He was like, you know, fat guy. He's taken up his share of armrest. So I was so uncomfortable this whole flight. I'm,
as the middle seat owner, it is your prerogative to have both armrests.
Right. You got
to
give me a little room. And you can see what's going on, that this woman is like totally unconscious and just keeps falling on him. It was so fucking annoying.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Yep. I could not believe it was happening.
That's the whole flight. I was so mad. Complete disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, a huge pet peeve of mine, this actually happened on my way out there, is when during the boarding process, if you're in an aisle or middle seat and you, for some reason, assume no one is going to have to get past you if you're sitting next to an empty seat. And so you set up. You get your laptop out. What do you think is going to happen here?
Yeah. You got to wait. I wait until I see that there is no more people coming on the plane.
Yep.
And at that point, you are free to spread out.
Yep. Yep.
But you can't make that assumption until you know.
Yep. Yep.
So I feel that way. It used to be on the train to New York, the Amtrak. Mm-hmm. Now these seats are assigned for the most part, which is frankly better. But it used to kind of be you just sit wherever you want. And like... Yeah, it's hard because you can't tell that like there's more cars where there are free seats. Mm. So it's hard to kind of judge like, oh, is that because everybody wants to sit
by themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I've searched for and eventually people will put their backpack like, oh, yeah, well, I'm here. My backpack's here. So you can't sit here. Mm. And I'm like, well, you can't. I'm not going to go searching the entire, mile long train for another seat. That's where I'm going to sit. And then people act so put upon, like, oh, really? You're sitting there? No. So it's better that they assigned it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, Southwest, they got rid of no more assigned seating either, which I think allegedly that was more efficient. But this is where I want a little less anarchy and a little more rules.
I've always thought they should board. I get why they don't do this because like couples and parents and their kids want to all board together. Mm-hmm. But it would make sense to board all the window seats first.
Yep, the middle seats and then the aisle seats. Yeah. If we lived in a communist country, like that's how we would do it. And it would be nice.
If we were better at queuing.
We said some things that were annoying about planes, but let me just ask you a little bit about your plane behavior, if I can, your activities on a plane. So you're flying cross country,
yes.
So five and a half hour flight.
Yeah.
What is your order of operations? What how do you entertain yourself during this time?
I play video games the entire time from start to finish. The second I am seated, the second I know there are no more people who are trying to get past me into my row, I break out my Nintendo Switch or my Nintendo Switch 2, and I play video games the entire time.
Oh, well, okay.
I don't pay – the plane could be hijacked and I wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. I pay no attention to what's happening to me, and I do that every single time. If I'm on a flight – I flew to Sicily over the summer for vacation, got engaged there. You can't.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The Switch dies on the way. Mm. So then I eventually might watch some television or something. Mm. That's about it. Okay. What about you?
So my theory of this, it matters a little less on. So like a 5-hour flight, I can handle where it's like I don't get too antsy, right? Anything beyond that, any sort of international things, like I need some strategies to get through this, right? But my general strategy is my attention span. I have both a time to spend by myself on projects that I'm interested in, and also my attention span is going to degrade as this flight goes on. So I start with the things that are hardest to pay attention to, that I normally don't have time for in my day-to-day life, and then step backwards and backwards to more and more mindless entertainment. So normally I'll start the flight by, writing some fiction or doing some of my work.
Nice. I find it so hard to work on the plane, but...
Yeah, well, it's getting more difficult for me now because I have, I already have this gigantic laptop, and then it's old, so some of the keys don't work. So I have, like, a gigantic, like, portable keyboard, too. So I can't really pull
I wonder why
out.
You don't use the letter E in any of your writing.
It's postmodern.
Yeah.
So I'll start with the writing, and then I'll transition to reading, and then from there to podcast and music.
Mm-hmm.
Although
sex in the bathroom,
even if it's just with myself. on some of my more recent flights, I'll either do that or I'll tell myself we're just book dogging. This flight. I have one book, and the only thing I'm going to do,
bookmaxing.
Come on. Where else do you need to be?
Yeah.
But that was a Slack notification for anyone listening at home. But Robbie's Slack notification.
Yeah.
But
Mog that book.
Yeah. Well, you frame Max or you frame Mog
or whatever
here.
It is.
Yeah.
This language is so insane.
All I do is sit here and I read the book for the entire flight. So that's what I did on the way out there. I couldn't because of the reading lamp. And instead, I just sat there listening to music. So.
You read War and Peace.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the Napoleon's invading. He's
wonder how that's gonna go.
Yeah, seems like it's going pretty well so far. These Russians, they have no idea what they're doing.
No idea what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. I'm reading now the Miss Marple, Agatha Christie books.
Okay, yeah. I've never read any Agatha Christie.
Oh, I love them so much. I love Hercule Poirot, as I've said, my favorite literary character. Marple ones are pretty good. I just love these kinds of mystery stories. They're all somewhat similar, but man, they just they scratch some itch of just like, you know, textbook British, stuffy British kind of a house with a bunch of extended relatives living in it and someone's murdered. And was it for the inheritance or was it the long lost cousin? And that's what everyone is. And I love them.
Hell yeah.
I love them.
Have you ever read any of the Isaac Asimov like robot novels or any of those?
I have not read that much Asimov. I've read some of his short stories. Okay. I love The Last Question, but not his novels, no.
So I would really recommend the Liz Bailey robot novels. There's three of them. And for this very reason is that they're, I believe, an explicit like homage to Agatha Christie.
Really?
Yes. They're detective novels, and they... normally end with the characters assembled and he goes through the case and accuses the actual
it's gotta killer. gotta be the way it is. And one of these stories in the novel I just finished writing, one of them is an explicit Christie style murder mystery where you have to have everyone gather all the suspects at the end and have to have the character walk through it and have a couple red herrings, false call outs until the real killer is revealed.
Man, see, this is what's so fun about writing fiction. It's just like there's types of reading, you know, literature that you like, and you're like, oh, I could do that too. Mm-hmm. I could have my own little spin on it. It's very fun. I was doing a little fiction writing in the airport, and I was using some AI for it. Not to be clear,
the way people think.
Not to write the prose or anything, but I needed to know how monkeys behave. You know, what's a monkey do when he's happy or angry or fearful? And so I was just kind of querying, you know, what do they do with their lips? And Gemini was very helpful.
I have used AI for exactly this task, looking up how to seduce a monkey. No, I mean, things you don't know about, it can give you very specific information. Like I'm trying to describe... You know, I can describe the aspects of like the structure of a castle to some degree, but what if I want a castle that specifically looks the way it would have looked in the 15th century versus the 16th century, or fashion, the way women in 19th century Russia would have dressed instead of in France or something? Like, give me the language to describe how they look, because I have it away in my head, and you know, I just know basic things, and that it's really helpful for that.
Yeah, sure. What is this actual particular architectural feature of the castle? What is the technical term?
Right. What is the here? Yeah? Mm-hmm. And it could give me some pointers on. Like, I'm not as even. I wanted this to be a kind of have some Nordic inspiration, but I'm not as up on Norse mythology as I am in other categories of mythology. And it gave me some really good pointers, real quick. Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. I see it's a good thing, and everybody hates it. And I was like, it's not replacing our jobs. It's not. I'm not going to have it write the story.
Well, what will be the point? Yeah.
There was actually maybe I'm not going to say this on podcast. I'm going to get somebody in trouble. Ooh. I noticed it's funny the journalists who are using AI to just write their stories.
Really?
Wow. It is. There was a guy at The Guardian who totally is doing it. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah. I think maybe I did see something about
There's
this.
Another guy. I'm pretty sure it's AI. I was cited in something at a different publication, obviously.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody else who was cited in it, and he said, it's AI. And I'm like, really? And then I read it again. I'm like, oh, my God, it's totally AI.
Yeah.
That's wild what people are trying to – people are charlatans. People are liars. People are hucksters trying to get away with whatever you can.
This is fun, right? Because, you know, for a while there, you couldn't really have good – you know, old school journalism scandals like you used to, the fabulists and the plagiarizers, because everything would just get revealed so quickly, right? You couldn't have a Stephen Glass anymore.
Stephen Glass.
But now this is the new one, is people are using AI to write their articles. Yeah.
AI. Yeah. What else did I have on my list today?
Your AI-generated list.
Okay, we did plane etiquette. We did... I wanted to talk about video games a little bit, actually.
Oh, okay. This is...
You don't play a lot of video games.
I used to as a... as a young boy growing up in the mid-2000s, I used to play had an Xbox 360, played a lot of Halo, games like that. I enjoyed those a lot. And then
your Halo is your so you're like a little too young for for us it was the classic is GoldenEye and 64.
Oh no, I played I played a bit of that too, but I never had an N64 system. But that was like you go over to your friend's house, they have that, you play some GoldenEye, right?
Thing had quite a long lifespan. It really did. If you think about it, the lifespan that games have now, like that thing was the thing all teenage boys did was play that game for like a 12-year span.
Yeah,
it feels like a 12-year span, maybe shorter than that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little split screen, and then you'd always get into arguments about, oh, you're looking at my screen. Well, it's on the same fucking TV. What do you expect's going to happen?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not a saint. yeah, that was a lot of fun. But no, then I transitioned to lots of strategy games. You know,
yeah.
Age of Empires, Rome Total War, Civilizations. And in my later years, I'll still play every once in a while. I'll play like some city building games, Surviving Mars. I really like, City Skylines, stuff like that. The Anno series as well. But outside of that, no, but, I can't remember the last time I played a video game. It's probably been over a year. I enjoy it. I just never, it's like kind of like going to the movies for me. It's like, it's an activity I enjoy. I just never think to, you know, spend my time doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. What did you want to do? You play a lot of video games.
Well, I have the reputation of someone who plays a lot of video games. So people are always asking me what I'm playing or what I think of this, and I inevitably don't know what they're talking about. The truth is I don't play a wide variety of video games.
Yeah.
I used to, I guess, when I was a kid. I don't have enough time. I'm a Nintendo person. I like the Mario games and Mario Fun, Super Smash Brothers and Mario Party and Mario Kart and the main Mario Adventure games, and I like the Zelda games. And every now and then I'm tempted and I buy some other game that's for, I'm just such a nostalgia head. I like replaying all the games from my childhood. Like I still go back and replay the old Zelda games and old Mario games, and that satisfies me perfectly well. And I don't really branch out beyond that, which is maybe to my detriment. Like the idea of getting a new game, like I've never played any of the Resident Evil games and there's a new Resident Evil game out that kind of looks cool. But the idea that I would just, it's not for Nintendo. It's for PlayStation or something. I don't know what it is for. I would never do that. I would never just buy a game that I've never played before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're I've known you for a while, Robbie, a few years now. You're an interesting game player, I feel like, because you have an ability to really kind of like understand a game and like figure out, okay, what's the strategy here? What's the tactics that I need to win? And so maybe that would make you someone who would be good at exploring new games. But on the flip side, I can understand, it's like, well, if I've already kind of gotten to the core logic of this game, why would I start over with something else, right?
A game in your way of thinking that I really liked when I was younger, me and my friend Tori used to play. It was a computer game that's like a civilizations building game. It was called... Nobody's ever heard of it, but we played. It was called Conquest of the New World. It was a civilizations building game, old game for the computer that was colonizing. You land in the New World. You pick to be France or England or the Dutch, and you unveil the map with your little explorers, and then you build a colony, and then eventually you have to rebel against your mother country. They send ships to come kill you, and you have to successfully fight them off.
Fun. Yeah.
And then you fight each other.
Oh, cool.
And it's really, it was really fun, because as you're exploring that, because the map is different every time. It's like seeds. You could say how much land feature you want versus how much water feature, and it would generate this map.
Yeah.
And then as you're exploring, you'll run across the other players, and you can fight them whenever you want.
Cool.
So, also the game just was not that well made, and like once you get to the point where you have large standing armies, the game just crashes during combat.
Which is a great
metaphor for right, what comes right, of our right. of warfare.
That's funny. It's fun when you have those games that you played a lot as a child and you didn't quite understand the flaws of the game, and now you can't appreciate them, but it's what you grew up with, and so you still kind of love it despite its flaws.
Yes, know? Exactly. Yeah. I had a game. That was they used to just make weird video games.
Yeah,
like before they'd figured out that you have to make good video games. Like same thing with movies and TV. Now it's all pretty good.
Yeah.
Like when I was real little for the Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES, which came out in I don't know 1986 or something. I don't know. Maybe later. It was called The Search for Dr. Livingston. It was based on the the explorer who goes missing in Africa, and you explore Africa. And this game was impossible to play and made no sense, and I couldn't get anywhere in it. And then like 10 years later, then I was older and I could understand it and I beat it. It was, the mechanics of it were still crazy. I had an Addams Family game. There were all these really interesting Addams Family video games for Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis that were notoriously very difficult. Spin-off games of major intellectual properties are always just the mechanics are weird and they're either too easy or way too hard. And
They're always really like paint by numbers, like basically a promotional tool.
Yeah.
Or they're like, oh, well, we need a video game. Let's hire some weirdo who actually has an interesting idea of what to do with this.
But this game was oddly compelling. It was this giant maze, and you play as Uncle Fester and you wander around. You're looking for it's based on the second Addams Family movie from the 90s, Addams Family Values, which is a great movie. And you play as Fester, who's wandering around looking for Morticia's baby, Pubert. And Fester is so slow moving, and his attack is he shoots lightning, but when he's at full health, he shoots very powerful lightning. And then if you take any damage whatsoever, your lightning becomes less effective the more damage you take. So it's very like you get hit once, you are screwed. And then it's this giant maze. You can only save if you track down Cousin It, who's in this one part of the game that you would never know how to find. So you just couldn't save. You had to redo it the first 100 times you played the game until you finally found where Cousin It was. And it took me years to beat it because there's this cube that you have to give to this monster, and you have no reason to think that cube would activate that monster.
Yeah.
Because it's just not well thought out.
Right, This is what
happened. They didn't think about it.
This is what happened back in the old days, right? You would get to a point, you'd get like three quarters of the way through a game, you know, a campaign, and you would just be at a complete loss for what to do. You would get irrevocably lost in the game.
Why can't I jump across that platform?
Right, and there's no guide. There's no forum.
Test it. Maybe you can't.
Yeah.
And the thing I most wanted to mention about this game is that it came with this instruction manual that was listing all the objects in the game you could find, including like a portable bridge, whatever. It lists things that are not actually in the game. These things are not in the game. I've been over every square inch of that game. And I finally, much later, I Googled it and I looked at them like, sure enough, the developers, for whatever reason, it kind of fits the Addams Family not making any sense. The things in the instruction manual are not necessarily in the game.
That's hilarious. That's so funny. Yeah. Was that done intentionally? Or
I have no idea. Yeah. But they don't make them like that anymore. And for good reason.
Yeah, right. Everything's a little too rational and neat. Yeah. No, that's funny.
Yeah.
Is there a particular type of game that you do not like, video games?
I don't. Sports games.
Yeah,
matter to me at all. First-person shooters are not necessarily my favorite category of game. I liked GoldenEye. Mm-hmm. There are other first-person shooter type games I played. Like, I didn't love Halo. I would play it at my cousin's house, and he was just always much better at it than I was, which I didn't like. I was better at Smash.
I was pretty good at Smash. I never really liked Super Smash Brothers because I never really knew what I was doing. I was just mashing the controller with my hand.
Pretty good at Smash.
I've had fond memories playing it, I guess, but I never really got into it.
I didn't like,
and I didn't really like the underlying IP either. Right? Like Nintendo stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't appeal to you.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skateboarder video game. Hated it. I hated skateboarding games. That was a whole category of games that I just did not understand and was terrible at.
Yeah, I did. I didn't like the Tony Hawk games skateboarding, but every single one had a great soundtrack.
Yes, soundtracks were great.
So they, always like.
Like
weird
Blink-182 rip-off bands.
Yeah, no, I don't like the Blink-182 so much. But yeah, they have a nice mix of like good rap, good rock, good metal. So that was always fun. So sports games, not a huge fan of. I do like first-person shooters. What I don't like is actually like, yeah, like role, like RPGs, right?
Oh, really?
Where you have to spend, you know, 6 hours developing your character or whatever else.
I do love those. I love those. I love the Final Fantasy games. That's another bunch of games I play. Yeah. Well, and I say I love the Final Fantasy games, but I liked Final Fantasy 7, 9, and 10, and that's it. And mm-hmm. I don't like any of the other ones. And I much, even though, and 7 and 9 don't even have this, but I love those games anyway. They have it kind of. I want turn-based combat. Mm. I hate, a lot of new RPG-style games were like, turn-based combat is for nerds or something, and now it's yeah. all, now it your well characters are yeah. are wandering around actually fighting things, or like you give them, this is in a later, I think it was Final Fantasy 12 that I couldn't get into for this reason, because it was like you had to program all the characters for how they would behave in a combat scenario, and then you're going to watch it play out.
Huh.
No, just like have us take turns.
Yeah.
Mm. I like turn-based combat.
Yeah. I like Civilizations. That's, you know, that's turn-based.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something
like
a little more
tactics.
Yeah, a little more strategic
yeah.
As opposed to just like agility with the controller. But yeah. I like that too. No, I don't like the, what I don't like in video games is like, not knowing where I am and what to do,
mm.
right? And you get that with a lot of RPGs, right?
So it is in life.
Indeed. And that's why I'm, you know, hateful and fearful every day I get out of bed. Yeah, so I like a good Halo game where it's just like, I got to kill all the people in front of me. Mm. Or I like a good strategy game where it's, you know, it's the Franks versus the Britons. And I got to, you know, it's
no, implementing satisfaction when the magic user levels up, when you find, oh, now we can put the special hat on him that gives him a +5 to deep. No, that all satisfies me. That does.
Scratches an ash.
I like right. that kind of stuff.
All right.
But well, I like a good story. I need a good story to go along with the games. Even yeah. if it's a simple story.
Yes, yeah.
Like mm-hmm. The Legend of Zelda, which are my favorite video games, the story in most of those games is not so insanely complicated or mm-hmm. like the Final Fantasy games actually do have incredibly complicated and novel equivalent stories mm-hmm. to a lot of yeah. them, particularly 10, I would say, is a great game. Zelda is a little simpler than that, but it makes you feel something. It has yeah. it has an atmosphere. It has you know recurring features,
mm-hmm.
and it's got something, and I like that. I don't like the two open world ones, the newer two that everyone loves, Breath of the Wild mm-hmm. and Tears of the Kingdom, because they really don't have any story to speak mm-hmm. of. And the story is very I don't like it, the story that does exist. And also the voice acting has kind of ruined it for me
mm.
because the voice actors it used to I don't know, when I didn't hear the Aoife Tree's voice and or not the Aoife Tree, the Deku Tree. And it was like
I was about to correct you. Yeah.
You know, I summon the Link.
Yeah.
And now it's like it sounds like some 10-year-old twerp's voice, and I was like, ew.
Oh yeah,
it's not good.
Halo, that's like solid like sci-fi storytelling. Mm-hmm. Good military science fiction. I even read, like, I was such a nerd, I like read the Halo novels and stuff.
What is he? Is he a robot?
No,
he's not a robot.
He's not a robot.
He's a
He's a human being
okay.
with thoughts and emotions. No, he's they're bred in this so they're identified as like stronger children, right, at a young age. Then they're put through a very rigorous Spartan training program. And then
it's like Ender's Game.
Yeah, but then with the added element of then they go through like a physical transformation mm-hmm. Where they're, you know, injected with a bunch of stuff and a lot of them die to physically transform them into larger, stronger soldiers.
Mm.
And so that they can then operate these armor suits that they wear. Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So it is a little kind of Ender's Game-y, a little less cerebral, maybe, and yeah.
Did you ever play Portal?
No, yeah, a little bit, but not. I never got super into it. I never owned the video game.
I didn't ever play it, but I've watched the entire thing be played from start to finish on YouTube because I love the evil computer Gladys or whatever is so funny, and it's a puzzle game, right? It's a puzzle game, but the narrative is actually pretty compelling because the computer is talking, right? The thing of the game is that you're being put through, you're in some kind of post-apocalypse and the computer gains sentience and it's making you go through, it's making you test out the experimental portal device, but the computer is evil and like enjoys your suffering, and it's very entertaining. It has some really good voice acting in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
BioShock. You ever play BioShock?
No.
Oh man, yes, you're a libertarian.
I know that's the libertarian one.
Yeah.
Is that there's a TV show or something?
Fallout.
That's Fallout. What, yeah. I can't even keep these things straight anymore.
Fallout has the TV show. Mm. BioShock, that would be an interesting.
Mm. What's that about?
TV show. BioShock, it's about Andrew Ryan is a so I guess the first game starts, you're shipwrecked, you're drowning, you're sinking, and then boom, you see this underwater city. Mm. And you get in the underwater city and you the discover
right. Misa, Misa, take you home.
We've got to get Jar Jar working. He's the funniest character we've heard in Star Wars. It all depends on Jar Jar. Now, you get to this underwater city, and you discover it's ruled by this man, Andrew Ryan, Ayn Rand. It's a city run on objectivist principles.
Oh, good.
That has then fallen to rebels. I won't spoil the game from there for anyone who hasn't played this 20-year-old video game, but it's excellent. Yeah. Does a man not own the sweat off his brow?
Oh, I like that. You were referencing again, we reference them all the time, but
the Mr. Plinkett reviews.
So yeah. Good. I was listening. I just listen to them all the time. I listen to them while I'm getting ready in the morning. I just have it on in the background.
They're so entertaining. They're so fun.
And
yeah.
Different ways he says things strike me different times. And he's talking about whatever the plan was in the beginning of Revenge of the Sith to take, because they kidnap Palpatine, but yeah. Palpatine is Sidious. Right. And it's never really explained, whether the kidnapping was done on purpose or was it staged?
Yeah.
Was it, and the result of it is that Count Dooku dies. Was that,
why would he go along with this?
Did they want that? Did he know? And so he's if so, was Count Dooku dying part of the plan? Did Count Dooku have a say in this? And then he's trying to go through all the scenario, and then he realizes that, it's just, the way he said, Grievous doesn't know it's Palpatine? Because I don't think General Grievous knows that he's taking orders from the guy he kidnapped. He doesn't know?
One of my favorite lines from the third Plinkett review, Revenge of the Sith, is I'm going to give this movie a thorough analysis. And he's going through the things that he likes about it, and he's like, number four, no Jar Jar Binks. We see this loathsome cunt for but a brief moment.
No kids. The only kid in this movie dies, and all of them die. These are positive things. All right. Let's call it before we get too deep into Star Wars prequels once again. Mm-hmm. I think it's about time to let you get some sleep, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
You look like you had a rough one.
I did. Okay, well, let's call it there.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening.